Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay. We're in chapter 7, verse 17. The chapter, even though it's one chapter, it's two totally different prophecies. And it breaks off right in the middle, and so you have to kind of finish one and then begin the other. So the first prophecy dealt with the fact that they were worried about King Ahaz was worried about the war from his two enemies. That until then, each of his enemies had been separate, Aram and the northern kingdom of Pekah ben Remaliahu. And now he was worried about the two of them. And the prophecy was that, don't worry, they, right now they appear to be very great and very menacing, but they'll disappear. They called it a firebrand. I'm not sure in English what a firebrand is exactly, but it's like sometimes a spark comes up and you get all scared, and then that it just flickers, and then it just totally goes out. And it's just a, it looks like a show. At the moment it looks scary, but then it quickly peters out and it doesn't... So too, like right now, it looks very scary how, what's going to be with these two great superpowers. And he was told, don't worry about it, it'll be okay. And he said, don't you want a sign? You know, the he didn't really want a miracle because that meant he might have to believe in Hashem that was saving him. If there was a sign from a prophet of Hashem, the results would be he'd have to change parties. There's sometimes people that don't want to be, they don't want to be, they want to know the truth. They don't want to accept the truth. And so he said, don't you want a sign? No, I don't want a sign. I'm fine. Don't, you know, because he knew that if he saw a sign and the sign came true, so then why didn't he accept the sign? But he would have the sign anyways, which would be that a young woman who normally would not be able to have children would now have a child. That would be the sign. And before the child reached an age of intelligence, these nations would be gone. That was the basic message. Now, we mentioned that the Yashki people were counting on people being illiterate, and they were looking for some way, some scriptural basis, you know, if the entire book of the Torah is going to be revamped and Hashem was going to change his mind and he was going to change the theme, there'd have to be some hint to that in the earlier books. And so they at first tried to squeeze it in over here. Part of it was based on the idea that they mistranslated a word. They had the word Alma, which means young woman. They translated that as a virgin. And so just based on a mistranslation, there was they were reading it from the Greek. And so in Greek, I guess the young woman and a virgin are the same word, but in Hebrew they're not. And so on that one word, they decide, oh, perfect, that was just what they were looking for. Some, like I said, a lot of the more honest theologians today admit that that was just a mistake that they... but the timing doesn't work. This was a sign that happened in those times, not 400 years later with the birth of Yashki, and had no connection whatsoever. But that was the beginning of the prophecy in Book 7, and now we're going to get another prophecy about another event that's going to take place. Verse 17. So the earlier event was the fear of the two superpowers. But now Yeshayah is telling him about an event that would happen where somebody would come and almost destroy the kingdom of Yehuda. And what is that? Verse 17. Yavo Hashem Elecha al am Kabal Bezavicha. Hashem will come on your people in the house of your father. Yom Hashem Obol Mayam Semefai Mayudas Melech Asher. There'll be a day that things will never look as bad as they would as they did on that day. There'll be an enemy that will come from the king of Asher will come. This is referring to Sancheirus. Sancheirus conquered the entire land of Eretz Israel. And this was after the destruction of the 10 tribes. So basically there was just one city left. It was just Yerushalayim. And Yerushalayim was besieged, and it didn't look like they would hold out. And a large group of Jews actually went over to the enemy side. They said there was no hope. When we read about the real destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we kind of wonder why those Jews were so stubborn. Why did they fight to the death? Why didn't they give in? Why didn't they work something out? And it happens to be that there were earlier times where we did survive. The enemy came all the way to the gates, and then a miracle happened, and we didn't have to give up our independence. So the question is, when to give in and when to fight? It's not always an easy question. Here, it should have been easy because they had prophets. They had someone that would speak to them from Hashem who would say, don't give up or give up, right? So there should have been a way to know, do you fight, do you not fight? One of the challenges we have today is there are people that live in parts of Eretz Yisrael that sometimes they feel a security need to give back to the Arabs, whether you feel that's a good idea or not. But some people say, well, shouldn't you give up your life rather than give up part of Eretz Yisrael? No, it doesn't say that. Are there cases where a prophet told us that we should fight to the death or not have faith? That there are, but we don't have prophets today. So we don't have prophets today. Nobody can say, well, I'm going to put this trailer here and I'm going to live here and no matter what happens, I'm going to stay and you're going to have to... there's a big difference between being told by Hashem that you should not give up and you should stay here no matter what, and being told by, and not knowing what Hashem wants from us. When you don't know what Hashem wants from us, you have no right to assume, well, fight to the death or do this or do that. We don't speak for Hashem. Sometimes when we had a prophet, we knew what to do, and sometimes we didn't. So at this particular time, Chizkiyahu, who would be the king later, was told that Hashem would save him. And it's an interesting terminology used over here in verse 18, how he would punish the enemy. He says they'll get a shave. First, he calls the nations. Whenever there's a war against the Jews, a lot of people like to join in. This is what happened in the Arab countries. You know, a lot of them thought that they, in the UN, if you want to get a popular, come against Israel, there'll be a lot of people that will support you, will join your side. And it's interesting, here we call those people gnats. You know, we call them like annoying things like that. When the Goyim tried to take over Eretz Israel, they'll like whistle to the flies and the bees. And they'll join you. They'll start swarming around. Oh, here's our chance. Let's kill some Jews, right? And they'll all swarm around. But that's how it's described here in verse 18. V'haya b'yomo yisruch Hashem l'zvu v'asher. Hashem will call out to all the flies and all the bees will come buzzing. The word for bee is devora. Asher b'eretz asher. They'll all come buzzing. U'bo v'nachu kulam, verse 19. And they'll all come, v'nachu abatim. And they'll like fill up the mountaintops. Like basically in Yerushalayim, they looked out around the city and as far as they could see, there were armies encamped out there. Just masses and masses of people. All around. Verse 20. And you know what's going to happen to all those masses of people? They're all going to get shaved. 20. Hashem is going to shave them with the great razor. Now, it's embarrassing to cut off the hair of their head. It's more embarrassing to cut off the hair of their beard and the hair of their legs, like to make them totally bald, is the description over here. When a king doesn't have his army, when he's like lost all of his power, his army would be totally wiped out. They had a case in Ohio with the Amish, where they had like an internal war. They cut off the beards. And it's interesting because the government, the judge who looked at the case, viewed it as a hate crime, because in that community, to cut off somebody's beard is like the worst thing you could do. It's like, you know, they would gladly be whipped rather than have their beard cut off, because that was a sign of, and it comes from the ancients. The ancients were like that also, like to have their beard cut off was like very humiliating, so this is describing what happened at that time. The Medrash says an interesting thing. When Hashem started the Levium, the Levites, he wanted them to be purified. And the rules of purification are that a person goes to the mikveh and they need to be totally clean, and the water has to touch them directly. And there was a one-time idea, which was that before they went to the mikveh, that they had to shave the Levium. And they shaved their hair. So Korach got shaved, and his wife laughed at him when he came home from the... She looked at him and she said, you look like, she laughed at him so much. You let Moshe Rabbeinu do that to you? You know, he just wanted you to look foolish so he could. And that's what started his path to going against Moshe Rabbeinu, was because the idea of being shaved, or it just, people looked at them. It was just a very big. This wasn't done in the Middle East, or the. But it's just interesting that over here it's described as they having their armies knocked down and defeated, and that's what's described here in verse 20. We were told not to give up and not to give into the Gentiles, and Hashem would protect us, and He did. Even though it looked like we were overwhelmed and there's no way we could withstand the siege, we did. That was Pesach night, by the way, that the army was destroyed. And some of the songs at the end of the Seder, we mentioned that the. Okay, now we get another part. This is what's hard about this chapter, just that it goes from one event to another, and we didn't really knock the chapters in this order. In fact, it was really done by the Gentiles. They tried to make things kind of orderly and, you know, put them in a theme. But there's a different prophecies that went on. Now, after the king was defeated, there was a time initially when the people were very poor, because when the Gentiles laid siege to the country, they wiped out all the farms and all of the agriculture. So it mentions, "V'haya b'yomahu yichya ish eglas bochu shteitzon." Usually when a person has a flock of sheep, or they have lots of cows, that's what they need to survive. But Hashem said that there'll be a miracle in that time. We'll have very little, and it'll be enough. And that, it's a different kind of blessing. It's a blessing of being satisfied. It's a blessing. Sometimes we feel that on some people feel that's the sukkah blessing. You know, when you go into a temporary dwelling and you're in a hut, and all of a sudden, you know, it's not so fancy. It's not so, especially when you're in a sukkah, you use paper plates or whatever. But you know, it's very beautiful. It's just as nice as some of the big fancy banquets you have in the fancy halls. And the it's a quality of being satisfied. You know, when Hashem, whatever Hashem gives our way, it can be a banquet. So the time of Chizkiyahu, the country itself was poor. It was destroyed, but the people were happy with just, you know, two sheep and a cow per family. And that sheep and that cow produced butter. It was fine. 22. They had enough milk. They had plenty of milk, and there was leftovers, and there was cream, which normally, sometimes there are times in society where the people have a lot more and they're not satisfied. And the blessing of that time was that the people were satisfied, that they had very little, but they... people often talk about that, like after the war years, or after they reminisce. People live in today's time. They remember, you know, in those days, they look at the houses. You know, today everybody has a house. They've added on all the houses in Cocoa Hills. They've all added on, and they've all. But you know, 40, 50 years ago, nobody lived like that. We all had the 2-3 bedrooms, and you had one bathroom. If you had two bathrooms, you were rich. You know, it was like and people were satisfied. And that was fine. Even wealthy people lived in their houses. They didn't have, you know, a bathroom per bedroom, a jacuzzi in each bed, you know, and somehow it was enough. It was really okay, you know. It was and so in a certain way, it's describing that the time is to have a blessing in what you have. Be satisfied with what you have. There's plenty of cream. There's plenty of butter. 23, and he's describing that generation. Other people say what happened was that the people studied in the times of Chizkiyahu. He encouraged people to study Torah, and the whole nation studied Torah to the point where they weren't making as much money, and so therefore there wasn't as many cows as many sheep, because people were spending all their spare time in the base medrash. 23. And there'll be parts of the country which were so valuable, where they had very valuable vines. In grape growers, they have certain vines that produce really good grapes that are prime grape country. So there'll be places where they had 1,000 grape vines, and you could have sold those grape vines for 1,000 kesef, and nobody will be farming it. L'shamer l'shis. Yeah, like nobody will be even concerned about, you know, don't you want to make that money? Don't you want to farm that land? No, we have our cow, we have our sheep, we're fine. We don't need anything more. There'll be it's a very interesting time. There were other times where people just wanted more and more. Verse 24, the places will be overgrown, and you'll need like, when things are overgrown, you need like a weed hacker to get in there. So that's what he's describing. With arrows and bows, you'll come there. The whole land will be overgrown. Again, the simple meaning was after the siege of Sennacherib. And the mountains, the people will go and they'll plant on the mountaintops. They had tilled vineyards in certain parts of China where they do that with the rice. But there were parts of the Middle East where they grew things on mountains. Are normally not thought of as farms. It's very hard to plow. But he's describing the mountaintops where they'd be overgrown. The Shoah Mirma said that people would survive on the mountains. They would till them and plow them. The idea that the Jewish people will somehow make the land work with what they have, that's pretty much what happened in our time. The British, one of their excuses for allowing Jews to die in the Holocaust was that they wouldn't survive in the Middle East. The land can't possibly support that many people. They had a study done that said there's no way than more than 500,000 people could survive. There's no way to produce food. There's no way. It's all desert. And the Jews came back, and today they're making software. But they used to make oranges, you know. But there are ways to make the land fruitful. That's always been the key in Eretz Yisrael, is to figure out to manage with what you have. So over here, it's describing some kind of mountain plowing. In other words, even though it's not conventional, certainly it wouldn't be our choice to have to plow on the mountains. In that time, the people will manage on the mountains.
It's terrace,
something like that. So I think that's this last verse, this 25, when it says the mountains will be dug with spades. It means the people will use their ingenuity somehow to make the land fruitful, even though the land was overgrown. And it talks about the worms and the thorns. It's an interesting combination of the worms and the thorns, but that's the prophecy that refers to, and that's the end. So basically, this chapter describes the first prophecy of the downfall of the two kings that would come against him, and also this later event in the times of Chizkiyahu, who would be his, I think it was either his son or his grandson. I believe it was his son, Achaz. I think it was Achaz, his son. And how the country would face terrible challenges, where the country would be destroyed and the farmland would be overgrown, and yet they would survive and they'd be satisfied, and that, you know, everybody on one cow and two sheep would somehow manage. And so that's the second prophecy. Okay, chapter 8. Now we get another prophecy. Moving along. V'yomer Hashem Eli. Hashem said to me, Haklaka Gilyan Guddle. He said, I want you to get a big scroll. One of the things is that the prophets were visual. Sometimes the messages were visual. We think of everything as words. Many times they were shown a visual. There was an object, there was a thing. So this, he told him, get like a really big Megillah, get a really big scroll. And what you should do, Ukosava love, you should write a message on it.
Like a billboard.
That's right, a billboard. I think so. It's something like that.
A giant billboard.
Okay. Oh, that's what he says? Oh, very good. Okay. Yeah, mine says the scroll, but yeah. Bechorat Enish Lemahir Shalom Chosh Buzz. He says he's again describing basically they're going to write four words on the large scroll. He's describing why the enemy came against us in that time. Again, we referred to the fact that they wouldn't succeed in their campaign, but now we're going back. In other words, we went forward, now we have to go back. We went to the defeat of that enemy, now we're going to why the enemy came. In other words, why before It's an interesting question, and we have to ask ourselves that often. Like, we have the Purim miracle where Haman is, and Ahasuerus was defeated. So we have to ask ourselves, well, why did Hashem allow Haman to get power over us in the first place? Well, we went to the banquet. We gave up hope of going back to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Hashem brought Haman against us, right? And then we have Hanukkah coming up, which, well, why did Hashem allow the Greeks to overpower Eretz Yisrael, that we had to defeat them? Well, we were becoming Hellenized. We were not, we were imitating the Greeks, and we were, they weren't doing the temple service. And so here also, when Hashem brought Assyria against us, so it's true they didn't defeat us, but what did we do that brought our enemies against us? There was a decline in Eretz Yisrael. And the truth is that there was a slow decline. The further away we got from the times of King David, the people had settled more into idolatry. They started imitating the tribes that were around them. First, the 10 tribes went bad, and they went bad very quickly. But even the tribes of Yehuda, which were mostly righteous, started imitating the 10 tribes and started also doing idolatry and other things. So Hashem was testifying that this behavior, put up the billboard that's going to say that the enemy is going to hurry up and take the spoils, that Eretz Yisrael would be taken over, so to speak, and that almost the entire land would be conquered. But on the billboard he would write, Lamar Shlal Chashbaz, those are the four words, Maher Shlal, quickly come for booty, in other words, come and take, Chashbaz, hurry up and get the spoils. In other words, most of Eretz Yisrael would be conquered at that time. Verse 2. The Edeli Edim Namanim. And I will give you two witnesses, Uriah HaKohen and Zechariah ben Yevarechahu. And they will testify that just like the... we have prophecies that talk about doom and gloom, and we have prophecies that talk about incredible miracles and glory and joy. And just like the doom and gloom prophecies came true, so too the prophecies of joy and rebuilding will come true. So these two people that testify, Uriah and Zechariahu, one of them had a doom and gloom prophecy, and one of them had a prophecy of rebuilding and good news. So we have to take them both together. That it's like some people, the Holocaust is not a, it's a challenge. It's a challenge in the sense that history has good and bad, but the same way that unusual things happen are a sign that Hashem is ruling the world, and the same way that he predicted that there would be different tragedies, we have to have faith that the same way the tragedies that were predicted came true, that the rebuilding that were predicted will come true. And if you had said to somebody 100 years ago, well, we're going to come back to the land of Israel after 1,000 years, and we're going to go to that desert, and we're going to rebuild it, and Jews will come from all over the world, all over the world, and come back to Israel, they'd say, no way, that's not going to happen. You know how many times we tried that, or how many years it's been? And that's happened in our times. And, you know, when we grew up, if you had said that they will let the Jews leave Russia that want to leave, no way. I mean, they were imprisoned. They had no freedom. And today in our time, there are yeshivas in Russia, the former Soviet Union. And anybody, there's 500,000 Jews left Russia after 70 years of communism, and they went to Israel. It's just incredible what happened. But things... Sometimes we don't look at it as a miracle anymore because we're just used to the idea that these things happen. So he's saying that I'm bringing two witnesses to testify that there'll be bad things that'll happen, that'll come true, and we have to have faith that when we that the good things will come true also. Okay, verse 3. The Ekrav El Navia. Interesting that it even goes into this. It says that he was intimate with his wife, Vitara, and she got pregnant with Taylor Bain. And he had a son. Now, Yeshayahu, for some reason, his family becomes part of his prophecy. He names his sons interesting names. It was a small country too, and having these famous family running around with these interesting names, when you think about it, it's like when in the beginning when Obama was first president, everybody was talking about his daughter's names. What were the names? Malia and I think like a lot of people name their kids those same names, and they become popular, and everybody talks about it. Like when a famous family be, everybody like pays attention to it. And so Yeshayahu was a well-known and respected prophet, and his kids were running around, and they didn't have a name like Reuven and Shimon. They had these really strange names, and the names were about the future events. And so apparently, so the name of his son was on the billboard was Maher Shlal Chashbaz. That's a come here, Maher Shlal Chashbaz. You know, what did you do at school today? that was the name that was given. Hashem told him to give his that. Basically, that people thought that things would be the same as they were, and that Hashem's patience would always be there, and they would be free to imitate the Gentiles, and it would never happen. And this child, this well-known family, was walking around, and he was saying that no, the enemies of the Jewish people will come and want to take away all of our wealth. Ki b'terem yada hanar kara avi v'imi, before this child grows up, yisa Hashem eschel damasek, the army from Damascus will come, the Shlal Shomron, and that army will defeat the 10 tribes in Shomron, Lifnei Melech Asher. So, first of all, they should know that the part of the Jewish people would be carried away. Verse 5, the Yosef Hashem Dibar Eli Od Leimor, he said the following. Verse 6, Yan Ki Ma'as Ha'am Azeh Ameh Shiluach. In Eretz Yisrael, we had a very nice, calm stream called the Shiluach. I think it's still there today. I don't think it's as big as. But the water, it was easy to navigate. It was very calm, very beautiful, and the people were bored with it, and they complained about it. They were looking to imitate the Gentiles. The part of the prophecy we had before was, "You can be satisfied with what you have." And there's so many people today that they want to, they're always looking for a new thrill. I'm always amazed at the new drugs they come out with that people want to take to make them the new experience. Unbelievable the things that people will do for the new high or for a bigger high or a greater high. Like, even the old drugs that they had in the 60s and 70s, those are like... They have these new drugs that make people eat do all kinds of crazy, crazy things, and it's like they're always looking for something even more wild, more bizarre, more. And so Hashem says, you know, you had this very beautiful stream in Eretz Yisrael, the Me'ez Shiluach, and you didn't like that. So, and you didn't like your king, a Masosis Ratzin Ben Ramayo. So therefore, guess what? Verse 7, you're going to have the waters of the Gentiles. So you're going to have to deal with the king of Usher. There's Kol Kavodo, and you'll have to pay for his armies and all of his wealth. And he's going to overflow the land. So he's predicting this conquering of Eretz Israel by Assyria. Verse 8, and he's going to conquer the northern kingdom, the kingdom of the 10 tribes, but he's going to come to Yehuda, and it's going to be up to your neck. You know, when we're talking about a hurricane or whatever, when the water is up to, they were talking last night, you know, if it comes here, the water would be up to my waist. Mm-hmm. And it's when the water gets up to the person's waist, that's very scary. The water is a very strong force. People get washed away, but if the water goes up to a person's neck, Chas v'Shalom, that's like really, so he's saying that the enemy is going to come, and it's going to be like water up to the neck. Yegia, Vaya Mutas Kanafos, and it'll reach everywhere. Mole Rafetzanu, it's going to almost like conquer our land. It's going to be really scary seeing the flash flood, the hurricane that's going to overflow the boundary. Not Hurricane Sandy, but whatever it's going to be, it's going to come and flood over our land. So what's going to be with us? So don't worry, Immanuel, God is with us. And so somehow we will manage to overcome. That always has to be a person, is the hope that we carry. Is that's the word Emmanuel, the God is with us, Immanuel. That sometimes it seems like the destruction or the forces that are against us are very strong, but that's only because we don't realize that Hashem is on our side. So that was the test of the people of that time, when the Gentiles would be overrunning Eretz Yisrael, and they would conquer the 10 tribes, and it would look like they were about to conquer Yehuda, that no, Hashem was with us. Verse 9. So what do you do? Ro'ami, you join together, Bechitu Ezinu Kolmer, and you, he says that you'll be broken. I think it means that he means like the I think the when the people see the destruction coming, it'll they will worry and they will be broken. Their arrogance and their desire, and all of a sudden everything they've worked for is going to be destroyed. So you will see these what's going on, and you'll be broken. And then when people see that, then they'll listen. He's Azu Vechitu. Like when these nations come against us, so we have to reach out to each other, and we have to be humbled. And I guess we will. We'll do one more pasuk. Utsu Eitzev Esufar. The nations will have these plans how they're going to conquer Eretz Yisrael, and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. They have all kinds of plans, but it won't come to anything. Dabur Dover, they will say things like Ahmadinejad, we're going to wipe them out, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, but lo yakam, it'll never happen. You know why? Ki Immanuel, because Hashem is with us. And so even though the picture of what's going to happen was very scary and the people would be broken, the people always have to know that Hashem will be with us, and these plans that our enemies have for destroying us will not come to fruition. Stop here.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.